Welcome to the Grace Lace Podcast. Today, instead of a conversation between my co-host Eve and me, you're getting a peek into the lives of the Grace Lace team members. These are the women I get to work with every day, and I'm so happy to share them with you. Today, they're talking about all the ways we can start where we are. Enjoy.
Hi, friends. I am so excited that we convinced you guys to come back for another episode of the Grace Lace Podcast. Whether you think it's true or not, we definitely got good feedback about our last team episode, and I love that our listeners will get to hear from you again today. So as you guys know, all season long, we've been chatting about what it looks like to start where you are, even when you don't have what you want, in a variety of areas of life. We've covered everything from our homes to our bodies to community and marriage, and today we get to hear from you. So to get us started, let's go around the room, quote unquote, it's a virtual room, and introduce yourself. So tell us what you do for the Grace Lace team, where you're located, and what your favorite snack food is.
Hey everyone, I'm Kinsey. I'm the community manager for Grace Lace, and I live in Dallas, Texas. My favorite snack would have to be chips and salsa, or a chocolate chip cookie, if you can count that as a snack and not dessert.
Yeah, I think you can totally count that as a snack.
I'm Sarah. I'm the graphic designer here at Grace Lace, and it is very hard to decide what my favorite snack is. I really don't know if I can choose.
But just one of
one of my favorites is pimento cheese with crackers. Ooh. For any of you Southern gals, definitely a staple.
And that makes sense, because where are you located?
I'm in Charleston, South Carolina.
It's about as Southern as it gets, right?
I am Anna. I'm the digital media and project manager at Grace Lace. I live in Durango, Colorado, alongside Ruth and Camille. And my favorite snack, I really like the like chili covered mango. That's like, ooh, that's probably my favorite thing to just munch on.
I like Trader Joe's especially. They have the best.
Yeah, we don't have one anywhere near us.
Anna, I will bring you some next time I see you.
I will take it.
This is Camille. I am the photographer and studio manager for Grace Lace. My favorite snack is probably chips, like any kind of chips, mainly salt and vinegar. But if you bring any kind of chip bag near me, I will eat the whole thing.
Good to know.
I'm Anna Leah, and I am the product development manager here at Grace Lace. I'm in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I was going to say apples and peanut butter, because I really love that. But then you had to bring in the whole chips and salsa thing. So realistically, I would definitely choose chips and queso if it was available on a daily basis. Uh-huh. But yeah, I usually have apples and peanut butter in my house with my kiddos. So
yeah, fair enough. Okay, I want to answer now too, even though I don't really need to. But I think my favorite snack right now, I feel like I go through phases, but right now I'm really digging pretzels and hummus. Like the combo, the salty and the creamy.
Oh, yum.
I know. Just, we're recording this before lunch, so us talking about snacks, everybody's like, okay, let's hurry up now. We're ready for it.
If you hear my stomach audibly rumble on this podcast, I'm just apologizing in advance.
Okay, that's good to know.
After all this snack talk, who knows?
Okay, well, now that we've got all of our snacks covered, let's dive in and talk about the different topics that Ruth and I have touched on throughout the season. I'd love to hear from you a couple of things. So, like, what is a struggle maybe in the area where you have felt yourself like longing for something different in a season? And then how you either did start where you were, or how you can do that right now. Like, this thing is hard, but here's how I'm starting where I am instead of waiting for like a more ideal circumstance. So let's talk about our houses first. This is like the place that we're in every day. We see all the time. So who wants to take it? When your house isn't your dream home, how do you start where you are?
I can share on this topic. I think this one is super relevant to myself and probably a lot of us on the team, with several of us being in our 20s or newly married or just in new homes or spaces. I know I've been married for about 4.5 years and we've lived in multiple apartments in different cities already. And now we have a house that we bought during the pandemic, but just having been in a lot of different spaces that especially renting, it's not always exactly what you picture or you can't mm-hmm. make the changes yeah. that you'd like to make. But I really related to what Eve said in the podcast earlier in this season on this topic. And I don't think the lack of doneness in my house stops me from hosting people, but I know I have really caught myself getting caught up in the wish list or wishing mm-hmm. that things were different or I could change things. I know in our first apartment, I really just wanted an updated kitchen and I wanted yeah. the kitchen to be prettier. And then we moved to a different condo once we moved to Dallas and I had the kitchen, but I didn't have hardwood floors. And I was like, you know, someday when I have hardwood floors, that would just be so nice. And then more space and, you know, the furniture that I see on Pinterest or I've seen that I just loved, but just didn't really work out in that timing. And I've really tried now that we have our house, just focusing on being grateful for the blessing of our home and having this mm-hmm. space that's ours, and not so much dwelling on the wish list, but just inviting people in and it is what it is and just focusing on the relationships in front of us and having gratitude for that season and not comparing to other people and different seasons yeah. with different or bigger homes or whatever that is. But one way that I know we've tried to start where we are in our home, it's not huge. And being an introverted person, a massive gathering is probably something that would be overwhelming to me. But we've tried to even just focus on having one couple or one friend or a couple mm-hmm. friends over a month for dinner or whatever and not dwelling on the Pinterest worthy or the perfect tablescape yeah. or whatever and just even if it's one person or a few people, it doesn't have to be super elaborate or huge or super beautiful or the finest meal or whatever. It doesn't have to be any of those things, but just focusing, even if it's a small gathering or a small conversation, just saying yes to those situations. So I'd love to hear from any of you guys. I know a lot of y'all are in new houses or newly married, if that relates to any of you guys too.
I think I would just like to point back to when, so I recently moved in a house, but when I was in an apartment before this, we pretty much had like no furniture at all. And Camille and her husband were actually over for dinner once and we didn't have a table or chairs. So what we did was pull out our camping table, which is like a rollout table. We had two camping chairs, like folding chairs, and then our two desk chairs because we were working from home. And I feel like that just points out that like you really
– And nobody cared,
right? Do want to do it. Like no one's going to care. They're going to be like, oh, I'll choose this chair. Oh, I'll like do whatever I need to do.
I didn't even notice you had camping chairs. I don't even remember any of that. I just remember how gracious y'all were and having dinner. That was literally all I looked at and thought about. So no one notices, guys.
Exactly. Yeah. That's crazy how much we it's crazy how much we can get into our own heads about like what we want or what we think or what we're hoping for. But yeah, I mean, 9 times out of 10, your guests are just like, yeah, it's fun. We got to be together. Like they're remembering the relationship mm-hmm. and how they felt and the conversation you had, and not so much whether you had a table runner that matched the carpet or, you know, like just the things that we love exactly. to like put together. That's funny.
As someone who's in a way different season too, even someone in her 40s who's been married for decades, and I have had to relearn this lesson over and over again. Like God has had to continually remind me of like what the mission for our home is rather mm-hmm. than, you know, I'm a visual person. I love me a good Pinterest board.
Yeah.
And not always being able to make that reality even now because of other places for our budget to go or my time needs to be.
Yeah.
But reminding myself, like, here's the mission he's given me for my home and my family. And that does not require it to look a certain way.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Oh, man, that's a good thing to remember. Yeah. Like, the mission does not require it to look a certain way. Well, speaking of mission and kind of the way that we direct our families, Annalee, this is a great transition. So one of the other topics that we talked about this season was when motherhood is hard. So tell us a little bit first about how many kids you have, and then maybe how motherhood is or has been hard, and an idea for starting where you are.
So I'm a mama to 5. My oldest is a senior in high school this year. He's going to be an adult soon.
Oh my goodness.
Totally blows my mind when I start to think about that for a little bit. And my littlest is 5. So I've got 5 in that range. She just started kindergarten and I homeschool those kiddos. So I'm with them a lot. yes, a lot. And we've always done that. So it's just, we're together a lot.
Yeah.
My thought is that first, hard does not mean bad. Mm. And motherhood has always been hard for me. And yeah. So I have some people who say, like, but you're good at that. Or you have, you know, you studied child and adolescent development at university, which I did. And I know a lot about kids, but it's always been hard. From like pregnancy, even though my first pregnancy was fairly easy, it's a lot of relational change, emotional, like, especially after a season of infertility for us, it was hard then. And it's hard now. And I think about, like, do I have regrets and working through those with a son who's about to go off and do his own thing. Mm. But it's like the best way possible, because hard is so refining, and it really leads to so much beauty and reliance on God. And so there's like change and growth. So I don't think it'll ever get easier.
Yeah.
There's always a new hard part. It hasn't gotten easier for me, but I got better at not expecting it to be easy, and learning to see myself as beloved and worthy of care. So like a part of my journey into understanding like the hardness of motherhood is seeing that like God does not expect me to be a martyr. He doesn't need me to neglect myself, because I am also a child. And it's part of starting where I'm at has been not expecting to be enough.
Hmm.
And looking at Christ to be enough, to be what I need for that. Like, stop asking why me, or why my kid, or why our family, and saying, why not? Like, what could he do here? What could I be learning here? Like, how much more gracious could I be after having experienced this? How much more like grace can I show the world? That goes back to like the mission of our family. Yeah. If I want to love others well, I have to learn how to love myself well and my kids as my primary ministry for where I'm at in life. So, like taking deep breaths. I know that sounds like learning how to rest well. Like, I can't neglect myself. Like, this is a long haul ministry, right? So 17 years in, hey, take a deep breath. He's going to be an adult in 5.5 months. Not that I'm counting the days, but I am.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think what you said kind of translates to any of the topics that we're going to talk about in this episode. Like, it's really trying to figure out how to embrace where you are, like not expecting it to be easier or different or hard. Like, okay, what can I do now to take care of the people that I have right now?
Yeah. And being able to say like, thank you, Lord, for allowing that, like allowing us these opportunities, these hard things, because it will help me love him better, love myself, love others, and love the world.
Yeah, I think I said in this episode when Ruth and I were talking, one of my things has been like thanking God for the things that feel difficult in my children's personalities. I mean, they're so little. My kids are 4 and then 2.5-year-old twins. But like saying like, thank you, Lord, for this strong will, like help us channel it for your glory. because it's not necessarily going to change like I hope it would sometimes. And I'm not meant to just control it. So like, how do we take what it is and ask God what he wants to do with it?
And how neat is that? Because that's such like anybody you meet out in the world. Like if we can learn to do that with people that we feel like we should have some power over, we really don't, you know, like we have some choices in how we can, what we can do with them. But there are a lot of people out in the world that can be tricky to love well, or to personalities are different than ours. And so it's really refining.
Yeah, for sure. Oh man. Okay. Here's a topic that I know we have all wrestled with at various times. a season when you are spiritually dry. Like, what do we do with that? How can we start where we are when it just feels really hard and like, I've got nothing to give spiritually. I don't want to read my Bible. I don't want to do these things. What do we do?
Yeah. I feel like one time that was very spiritually dry for me personally was during the pandemic, as I was wrestling with some particularly tough scriptures and not really surrounded by the community that I was before. Yeah. Or at least it just didn't feel the same being on Zoom and stuff. And and I definitely felt like pretty isolated during the pandemic too. Mm-hmm. And so a couple things really helped me. And I feel like there are totally ways to start where you are. And mm-hmm. one actually my pastor at church mentioned last week is like if you're kind of feeling like the Bible never says just stop reading your Bible. Like it's I feel like it's so easy to just kind of pull away and like if something's feeling uncomfortable or you're not getting like the quote unquote results that you want, it's easy to just want to quit. But the Bible does not say that at all. It like the way we can really know what God's like speaking in our lives is by knowing his word. And so like if it's feeling tough to read the word and read scriptures, I totally would recommend checking out last season's podcast because honestly, it had some really helpful tips for me personally and just ways to kind of approach the word differently. But I would say maybe try to find new ways to experience God's word, whether it's through journaling or kind of switching it up. And another thing that I really think was probably the most valuable for me personally in a spiritually dry season is leaning into community. And I honestly, like since kind of we've been back in the swing of things and going to church, like not virtually and meeting with other believers on a regular basis, I've felt like a pretty noticeable shift. And it's like so true that we're not meant to walk alone. And obviously the pandemic was, you know, an unusual circumstance, but I'm sure I'm not alone and have feeling some of those feelings during that time. And so I would just say like,
not alone. That,
The community is like so valuable in a spiritually dry season, whether it's continuing to meet with your friends that are other believers or physically going to church on Sundays. Like, for me, it just has felt so like nourishing to my soul. And so, I feel like that's probably the biggest way to start where you are is leaning in the community around you.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too. I can think of different seasons where it's been really hard for me to like believe a specific truth or to fight a specific lie even, and having people around me who like knew what was going on and could like repeat things to me or say like, I know you're having a hard time believing that God is good. I'm just going to tell you like he is really good. And like, here's where it says in the Bible that he's really good. So yeah, I think having other people speak into kind of those dry spots where it feels tough is so helpful.
Yeah. We were created for community, so we need it.
Yeah. Oh man, here's another area where community is sometimes not helpful, but can be really helpful and life-giving if we'll let it be. And that is when your body isn't what you envisioned or kind of what you hoped for. This is probably something that almost every woman can relate to at some level. So Camille, tell us, how has this played out for you? And then any ideas on how to start where you are?
Yeah, I was trying to think about it like, I feel like everyone has struggled with this at some point. And it may even be like a constant thing. Like, is this something we're always going to struggle with? But I know for me especially, I've always struggled with looking at my body as not ideal. And how could you not when you're like on social media almost every day and looking at photos of other women who look completely different than you or built differently than you? Like, I think social media especially has made it so hard for us to not compare ourselves to something unattainable. And I don't know about y'all if that's something you struggle with, but I know for me, like a lot of times I have to take a step back and be like, God built them that way. God built me this way. It's yeah. okay that I don't look like that. And I know for me, one of the things I don't like about my body that I look at in the mirror is my legs and my thighs, because they are kind of more muscular. And I threw around the term thunder thighs earlier, which mm-hmm. I know sounds awful, but sometimes I'm like, man, I do have some thunder thighs. But I think one thing that's kind of helped me in my struggle with this has been trying to look at my body with eyes of gratitude instead of comparing it to what I think others will want out of me, if that makes sense. Like looking at my thighs and realizing like, man, God, you made me strong. You made me able to go on bike rides with my husband or bike rides with friends. And
not just any bike rides up mountains, like serious actual mountains.
Yeah. But just like even Analia, like being with your kids and like realizing that God gave you legs to bend down and like play with your kids, or he gave me arms that are strong that I can thankfully do my job and lift very heavy Grace Lakes products, like that I can do my job. Just I think it'll always be a constant struggle and a constant just use of willpower to look at your body with grateful eyes instead of disdain, if that makes sense.
I think that makes a lot of sense, but I also want to say there's people probably listening here who are in a position maybe like me where my body doesn't always do what would be expected. I've had chronic illness for over 2 decades, and I was like 19 the first time it stopped working like I thought it should work for a 19-year-old. Mm-hmm. Even if it didn't always look like I thought I wanted. I dealt with that even before. So, because, you know, I grew up before social media. I was a, I was a young adult before social media. But even not even having to fight like cultural norms for how I should look, just not working right. Like having to use a cane through college and realizing that I can hold space for both. Like my body is good because God creates good things. Mm-hmm. And I live in a broken world and I can be both. I can be grateful. And I can mourn like what I wish, like I can't always bend down and play with my kids like I want to, but I can find space to still find a place to be thankful for God for where I'm at. Yeah. So I think recognizing that it's hard.
It's such a complex.
It's hard. And like I said, like it's discouraging because you're like, is this something I'm always going to struggle with? And it honestly may be until we're completely healed in heaven and mm-hmm. praise God that that's coming, you know?
Yeah. And I'll be like, I made so much great progress on this in my life. And then I couldn't like zip my jeans like I expected over the weekend. And the first thing I wanted to be was like, ugh, you know, like, of course they don't fit. And I'm like, my body is changing shape. Like, let's talk about this. I can buy a different size.
Well, and it goes back to even thinking about like when we said, you know, the mission wasn't affected by how it looked. And it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, in a lot of ways. Ooh. That's the same way with our bodies. Like the mission God has given us and the tasks he's called us to do aren't usually, there may be a few instances, but like aren't usually affected or like, you know.
You're just using my words back at me, huh? Aren't you? Like right here, I needed you to repeat that.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
Maybe we need that on like a Hobby Lobby sign. You know how it's all those things. I need that. Those in my house.
We'll get Ruth to letter it and paint some flowers around it.
Perfect. Coming soon.
Make sure you're subscribed to the newsletter so you get all the okay, so the last kind of chunk of life that we wanted to talk about was how you can start where you are when the honeymoon is over. So in marriage, this really could relate to even in like friendships, like kind of just after that initial time, definitely with roommates, right, where you're excited to live together and then you're like, hold up, I didn't realize XYZ. So what does it look like, maybe specifically in marriage, I think is what Anna is going to talk about, but what do you do when the honeymoon is over, and then how do you just start with what you have and not what you long for?
And I was just mentioning this earlier. My experience for marriage has looked a lot different than a lot of people, and maybe even relatable to you because you got married in the midst of the pandemic. And I got married at in June of 2020. So about 2.5-ish, close to 2.5-ish years ago. So the beginning of marriage, what people would call the honeymoon phase, looked very different for me because I was in the same confined space as my husband, both working from home, and you couldn't go out and do anything. So it was really interesting to experience that together. And what people would consider like the honeymoon phase being like a couple years or a couple, like even 5 years down the road, I kind of look back and I'm like, I feel like everything was a little bit sped up for me because when you're stuck in the confined space with somebody else,
yeah,
and you're not going away for work and then coming back at the end of the day and asking how your day was, you're literally together all the time during those in-between moments. You recognize that there's like pet peeves that you have that you didn't know you had, or things like leaving the shower curtain open actually bugs me way more than I thought it would, than like just having it closed all the time. But things like that where you recognize and you start to dwell on the like negative things or the things that bug you a lot more than you would be dwelling on the positive things and the good things. And so I think anyone who's married can like attest to that. And even like Eve was saying, when your roommates are not washing their dishes or like your roommates leave things on the ground and you come back home after a long day of college and you just feel still chaotic because there's just a mess everywhere. And then you have to go to your room to like feel at peace. But in the midst of being able to just look back and reflect and recognize like, hey, what I can do is like, if I'm choosing to reflect on the negative things, and if I'm choosing to do these things, well, in reality, it's not helping me, it's not encouraging my husband, and it's not building our marriage. And so one thing that I've really been trying to do a lot more lately in starting where I'm at is just reflecting on the good things and reflecting on the time that we do have together and reflecting on the things that he does do to serve us and serve our household and just taking out the trash. And like, I never have to think about it because that's what he does. And if I just sat there and was like, oh, it's starting to smell, like he's going to take the trash out. Like that's just something that he does to serve us. So taking the time to like reflect on the good things of what they're serving or like,
yeah,
like how they're serving us or characteristics about them too, that instead of choosing to point out the pet peeves, you can choose to encourage them and be like, hey, thank you for like loving me and thank you for like recognizing me in this moment or thank you for taking me out tonight. Like the little things that we can choose to be positive about and reflect on the goodness of God and kind of like a lot of other things we mentioned today and just gratitude. When we choose to step into that, we're actually building ourselves up and our marriage up and the people around us up more.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember what book it was, but I read a book recently in the last couple of years about marriage, and the woman was talking about how she recommended that after like a really good day together, like a really like kind of high point, to make a list of all the things that you like love about your husband. Could be like physically, it could be emotionally, like just anything that you really like admire about them that you love. And tuck it away. And when you have a really bad day or you have a fight, like pull it out to remind yourself of like, okay, this is a rough moment, but like here are all the things that are true and that I really do appreciate. And so it's a kind of a different twist on gratitude, but I was like, that's so helpful. Like, don't try and just think of it when I'm mad. Like maybe make the list when things are really good and I'm feeling really positive, and then refer back to it when it's been a hard conversation or a rough day. Okay. Well, kind of the last topic that we wanted to touch on today is the idea of starting where you are when community doesn't come easily. So we've referenced it even a couple of times in our conversation today. I think there's lots of reasons why community feels hard, right? Like maybe you just moved and it's like, I have to find a whole new community. Maybe you just graduated college and you're like, wait, how do you make friends when you're an adult? Because I think I forgot.
Yeah.
Maybe, but did anybody else feel that? Or was that just me?
Yes. Okay. Definitely.
I was like, wait a minute. You're all looking at me and I need to know that I'm not the only person who had to figure out how to make friends. You know, maybe you've just come through a hard season. Like sometimes friendships end and it's really awkward and you're like, ugh, now what? Like, how do we move forward? So maybe just as a way for us to encourage any of the listeners today, like what do you do when community doesn't come easily? We've talked about how important it is already and like how it can help feed us spiritually in all these ways. So if that's really hard, how do you start where you are? Like, what do you do when that's hard?
I can definitely just speak a little bit into this and to how last week I had a meltdown of like this topic and just being like, I have no friends that are Christian that like I can talk to about things or like dive deep about things, and got to share a little bit with Ruth and Camille because they're here. But in those moments when it is hard, it's one of those things where it's like I can choose to like be in my own head and like just dwell on this, or I can choose to like verbally express these things to other people who are around me and who I know are like going to encourage me and speak truth into that. So when like when those thoughts come or when those hardships come, like those people that are close to you, like reach out to them and be like, hey, like sometimes you just need to listen, and I just want you to listen in this moment of what I'm feeling, and if you want to speak into it, go for it, but like I need to get this off my chest and share it with your husband or share it with your close girlfriends or the people around you, and invite people into those spaces. Because being someone who moved to a new city and was out of college recently, like trying to make new friends as an adult has been really hard, even like you mentioned that. And so choosing to invite people into those moments, even though it's hard to invite people into those moments, really does make a huge difference.
Yeah. So what I hear you saying is like, you have to be vulnerable, and that's like, can be a little scary, right? Especially, are they going to still want to talk to me or know me after I share some of my gunk? Or, so I moved as like in my 30s when I already had a few kids to a totally different part of the world, country.
I mean, pretty much
Mexico world. can feel like a different country.
Yeah.
Too. No, but learning to open up again. Like, I'm not in college anymore. We're not doing these late night gatherings. But I remember that was when my my friendship with Ruth really like blossomed, and we would be like, okay, tonight after we get the kids to bed, we're going to meet for chips and queso, of course, right?
I love it.
And just talk until the restaurant would kick us out, because we needed to find ways to be vulnerable. And that is like a skill set that we can, that can get rusty.
Yeah.
I think if you're, if you have older friends that already know stuff where you're not having to be, or like, you know, they're going to like you anyway, because they've been friends with you forever. So inviting people in is so key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially for those of us that are maybe more internal processors or introverts, like I might think a lot of things in my head, but like you said, Anna, like expressing that to at least a couple of people, like letting them know, hey, this is a hard thing that I'm thinking about right now. Or
Yeah. And even being transparent, sometimes I'll like be thinking about something for so long that like you start to think it's actually true when it's not true. Mm-hmm. And I like verbalize it to my husband and he's like, that's a lie. Like just straight up, like, that's not true. Like, why are you thinking that? And we don't even, as an introvert, like you don't even realize you're starting to believe a lie because you've like rehearsed it to yourself so much. Mm-hmm. But inviting people into those spaces helps them call it out.
Yeah. What else? Any other tips for when community feels hard? Where to start?
One tip I would have is also to maybe not be so picky. I don't know if that is going to translate what I'm trying to say, but sometimes I have this idealized version of what my community will look like, like what my group of girlfriends will be, and what are like similarities of lifestyle or mindset. And God just puts us with people, and he wants us to build with the unexpected. I just even think through like the New Testament and the kind of people that Jesus hung out with. And I'm like, you know, so, but I think that there's so much to be like, to grow by being open to that and not being picky. And so, and goodness, I mean, I hope people aren't too picky to like not want to hang out with me, because I'll be like, yeah, my life is kind of messy sometimes.
As we all are.
Yeah. I think one thing too, like, just thinking about, you know, as you get older, it seems like life gets busier. People are in different stages of life. Like for me, some of my friends have kids, some don't, some are single, some are married. It's all over the board. And sometimes it can be harder to put something on the calendar to hang out. And I think sometimes something that can be kind of helpful is getting a little creative with the way that you hang out. Like, for example, I have one friend who she is really busy all the time, but she's one of my closest friends, so I always want to hang out with her. So sometimes we'll just do chores together. Like we'll literally fold laundry together.
Yeah.
And it's so fun because I'm hanging out with her, even though we're folding clothes. And so I think getting a little creative with the way you hang out can, if the reason why community is hard is because busyness, that can be one thing that really helps.
Yeah. And sometimes spontaneity is the easiest too. Like sometimes it is really hard to find a date on the calendar. But sometimes I can text a friend at like 8:30 on a Saturday morning and be like, can we brunch in an hour? And they're like, actually, yes. Like, actually, I can do that. Like, let's make it happen. So
oh, I love that.
Well, I hope that you guys have been encouraged by today's conversation and hearing from our team. Thanks, you guys, for hopping in. I know it's maybe not everyone's favorite to be on a podcast, but I know that we all benefit from hearing your voice and hearing what you have to say. And so thanks so much.
This entire season has been about starting where you are when what you have isn't exactly what you want. And it's been so fun to hear from you all about how it sparked conversations in your everyday life. I hope what Eve and I have shared all season long and what my team shared today has encouraged you to lean in and trust that God has you exactly where you're supposed to be. This may be the last episode of season 3, but never fear, Eve and I are already working on what's next. We'll be kicking off season 4 of the Gracelace podcast in January with the new year, but we'll have a few fun bonus episodes planned between now and then. Make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast and you'll get notifications when new episodes are released. We're so grateful for your support and would be so honored if you take a minute to leave a review and help others find us before the next season.